Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
In this episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli, Debbie is joined by the president of The Ohio State University, Dr. Christina Johnson. Dr. Johnson tells Debbie what it was like being a huge part of saving Big Ten football this season, getting the game ball from head coach Ryan Day and quarterback Justin Fields at Ohio State. Debbie and Dr. J also get into her transition to being the president of Ohio State since her start in June of 2020, and what role athletic director Gene Smith played in making that transition a smooth one. Dr. Johnson tells a couple of great stories during her time as Secretary of Energy for the Obama administration. Be sure to listen to hear why President Obama still owes her a round of golf and what role Debbie played in filling out Hillary Clinton's NCAA tournament brackets in 2010. And since we are name dropping, what about the time Dr. Johnson, Debbie, and Beth Mowins played a round of golf with Darius Rucker during his time with Hootie and the Blowfish? For the academia crowd, Dr. Johnson also tells us why blue is the hardest color to reproduce in television format. That was a conversation that definitely went over my head. She also talks about what a day in the life of an Ohio State president is like and why sports are important to the culture of a university. This is definitely in the running for one of our best episodes yet on Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli. Please enjoy, and here's Debbie.
You got to be kidding me. Like, I can get the president, Dr. J, Christine Johnson at Ohio State, and she actually agrees to come on the podcast. Dr. J, you are amazing. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here, Debbie. I'd do anything for you. You know that.
Well, I'm going to hold you to that when football comes around. You're the president of The Ohio State University. You know, I spent time there as the director of marketing a long time ago. I spent 4 years there working for Archie Griffin, the great Archie Griffin.
Oh, my gosh.
Jim Jones, the director of athletics, who has recently passed, who was a great mentor of mine. But your path to Ohio State is really unique and really filled with all these fun little changes and ebbs and flows along the way. Kind of break it down for us, Dr. J. Just got a report on your path.
Well, unlike you, Debbie, I actually grew up in pre-Title IX times, right? So right as I was becoming a senior in high school, Title IX was getting passed. So we didn't have a lot of women's sports in high school. So when I went to Stanford, went undergraduate and graduate there, I really enjoyed team sports. Really, I grew up in a family of seven, all swimmers. I hated cold water, so I was going to be very successful. So I went out for a couple teams. I went out for field hockey, and I went out for lacrosse. I actually formed a lacrosse club because in high school, I so wanted to play in team sport that I went out for boys lacrosse as a senior.
Love it.
Anyway, long story short, it was really helpful to me because it helped me in college organize my time. I knew I went to class in the morning, had to be in the afternoon on the field, study at night. So it was pretty organized. After I graduated, I ran into, you know, a little bit of health difficulty, as you may know, had Hodgkin's disease, and that kind of cut short any delusion I might have had of being an Olympian. And I figured, well, I better put my brain to work because I don't think my body's going to necessarily get me there. Have since learned I didn't really have the talent, but I had the heart. So studied, got a PhD, started my career at University of Colorado, was awesome. 14 years as Buffalo. And then this school in the South called and said, well, you know, we're looking for a dean of engineering, and that would be Duke University. And it was really the first time I got a chance to lead as an administrator. So that was pretty cool. And we'll probably come back to that because that's when we met. After Duke, as a dean, I had the opportunity to serve as provost at Johns Hopkins, which was really terrific. And then in the fall of 2008, as we know, we elected a new president, President Obama. And I remember watching him and Michelle Obama, the first lady elect, come out onto the dais there in Chicago with Sasha and Malia. And I thought, wow, if I could help with this administration, I'd love to. And then I got a chance to serve as Undersecretary of Energy for a couple of years. So that was pretty fun. Got so excited about clean energy, started a clean energy company. I sold that about a year ago in the fall, and wanted to go back into academia. Had actually gone to be the chancellor of State University of New York the year before. And then I missed the campus, missed the students, missed the sports, the athletics, I missed the academics. So I was fortunate enough to be offered the position to lead the Ohio State University, and here we are.
That's amazing to me, because you're right about where we first met at Duke. And me and Beth Bowens would be sitting up there in the rafters calling the games, and you'd be sitting on the baseline, and you were such a great sports fan, and you loved women's athletics. I knew that, but I know you love athletics all across the board. You know, it's just amazing to me that we would text you and say, hey, come on up to the perch with us. And you would actually climb up there with us and hang out and watch the game from up top. Like, what, do you remember some of those experiences, or you've had so many other things that you've done? I mean, does that even rank in your memory?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'd get up there on the crow's nest or whatever it was called, and I sit there with you and Beth. Here's what surprised me, and, take this in the right way. But you guys were so fast. I mean, you make it seem so easy when you're on, but you're like passing notes, talking about this, you've got statistics going. And I was blown away. I just sit behind you and watch this action. I thought, wow, yeah, Debbie, she's pretty smart. Oh, wow. I always knew Beth was smart, right?
But yeah, I know. I'm the one carrying the donuts and the luggage. Beth is with a crown on, leading the charge. I mean, she's so awesome. We still get to work together, and it's a lot of fun.
That's neat. You guys are, you're terrific. It was really a pleasure and honor to sit there and kind of watch the action behind it. But it was really fast. I mean,
well, thank you. Thank you so much for saying that. You know, the Pratt School of Engineering earned us a post game. I will say that every time we dropped it on the air. Do the faculty and staff and the students on that campus at The Ohio State have any idea how much fun and how cool you are? We all know how smart you are. There's a lot of times that you and I have conversation, and I'm like, Chris, I don't even know what you're talking about. But do they know how much fun you are yet? Have they figured it out? Because you've been on the job since July.
Yeah, so I actually came in and left the State University of New York in July, and then we drove out here in August, Veronica and myself, took a couple, had planned to move in, take a couple weeks off, and then start up. But, you're in the middle of COVID-19. I actually started to go into the office on August 1st, didn't officially start till the 1st. So it's been pretty serious business, I would say, because with 65,000 students and 3,000-4,000 faculty, 49,000 faculty and staff all together, and just want to keep everybody safe and healthy as much as possible. So it's been pretty intense, I will say. And then there's a few other things that happened along the way too that we as a team handled. So it's been crazy, but it's been good, crazy good.
You grabbed major headlines in sports because of the COVID and because of the football situation in the Big Ten. And without diving into great detail on that, because we all know what that was all about, you were front and center on helping save football in the Big Ten. I read a story in the New York Times about the in-depth detail that it required and your role in it. It was pretty fascinating. Like, could you sort of give us a little taste of what was going on, what you were thinking?
Well, imagine your new president coming in and first of all, you're dealing with, and many of my colleagues, and I give them a lot of credit throughout the country, of the 3,000 colleges and universities, trying to keep that enterprise afloat when you don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, I'll tell you some things we didn't know. We didn't know, for example, if we'd have in-classroom transmission, right? We didn't know how often we should be testing. We didn't know about quarantining. So we learned a whole lot pretty quickly. And fortunately, because we have the Wexner Medical Center and some great folks there, Annie Thomas, who's our chief medical officer, Hal Paz is our chancellor, and thousands of docs and nurses and just healthcare professionals keeping us all safe. We just didn't know what we didn't know, but we learned pretty quick. And So that was sort of one theme. And then, you know, this has been a year of tremendous social unrest in a very I would say, a critical juncture when the whole world is waking up to realizing the inequities that exist. So we're working on that. We've got some initiatives that we're announcing. And then, you know, fall sports being canceled. Postponed. So that was real important. I mean, language is important. We didn't cancel, we postponed, because that allows us then to reopen. And so, you know, I give a lot of credit to the Big Ten. It was a very thoughtful, very tough decision. But it was made for the right reason, because, again, we didn't know what we didn't know about myocarditis. And that was really a big thing, is to understand, were we putting our athletes in even more harm's way because of myocarditis. So it took us a while. But I think what was really great is that because we have so many schools in the Big Ten with these incredible health science centers, and that we put together a medical team that was chaired by Dr. Borchers at The Ohio State University. It really came up with a protocol for ensuring if we went back to fall sports, how we'd keep our student athletes safe. So that was really important. And I think Dr. Borchers and his colleagues, I think it was co-chaired by Sandy Barber at Penn State. This is really important. Laid out a formula that pretty much worked. I mean, it's hard to be in a county when they go purple with really high positivity rate, because we are part of that county to maintain a low rate. Fortunately, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Super excited about. I did just, my number came up. I'm a little older than you, Debbie, so I did get vaccinated last week, my first dose, and I'll get my second one in a few weeks. So I think we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And just hats off to the community who wore masks, stayed socially distant, and, you know, really prevented much bigger spread that could have happened.
You sent me a picture after the first football game this season, and it was you after the team and head coach Ryan Day had given you the game ball. Were you expecting that? I mean, like, that's phenomenal. You got the game ball.
I know, right? I was not expecting it. So Veronica and I were at the game. Of course, we didn't have fans in the stands. We just had families of the players and other officials that needed to be there, right? And then we went by ourselves in the suite pretty much. Gene Smith, who is our fantastic athletic director, came down to the box and said, "Hey, let's go on down on field." And I said, "Really?" You know, they said, yeah, come on down on field. So I said, "Okay, I'll go down on field." And then after every game, as you know, we sing, you know, the alma mater, Carmen, Ohio. And so we're all, you know, there singing that. And he goes, "Well, come on to the locker room." I said, "Okay." So I walked into the locker room and it was pretty exciting, right? I mean, this was, we just really had a great game against Nebraska. The guys were back, we were playing, everybody's in just fantastic mood. And then the coach says, "Well, there's somebody we want to recognize." And I'm thinking, you know, Justin Fields, you know, all the folks. And he said, "Well, and she," and I went, "Oh my God." And he handed the ball to Justin Fields, who came over and handed me the ball. And it was fantastic. I mean, I couldn't believe it. It was great. You know, just because, you know, it's what Veronica and I both said to the guys before the game. So we went out and met with the team. We said, "We know what it's like to have something you've worked really hard for taken away from you. I mean, I know what it was like to get Hodgkin's disease and not be able to continue to play at the level I wanted to play. And even if I had been able to make the 1980 Olympics team, of course, we didn't go. And there are some of my teammates at Stanford who made the team and didn't get to play." So that, and then Veronica qualified for Barcelona. And she would have represented her country in backstroke. And the country decided, Venezuela, to not send the swim team at 2 weeks before the Olympics. They're supposed to leave. They had tapered. She had swum 16 years in a pool to get her shot, and it got taken away.
Wow.
So we both knew what those guys and gals were going through on all the sports teams. It was like, we got to figure this out. And, you know, again, hats off to the Big Ten and to the teams that figured it out.
That's phenomenal. that a lot of people would look at someone that has been as successful as you have and never think about some of the, not the failures, but some of the adversity and obstacles that you've had to face. And it's okay to fail as long as you learn from it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
What have you learned from your time in sport and all the years that you've been involved in sport at a lot of different levels, including being a player and an athlete, that has allowed you to be such a strong leader for The Ohio State?
Well, that's what I certainly aim to be. And it's a work in progress. I think, a couple things. When I was really training hard for field hockey, and it was the first time I went to tryouts, summer of 1978, didn't make the team. Would have been surprised if I had, since I only picked up the sport in 76. So it was a little bit, as I said, but I got invited to go. I did go. I made it through a couple cuts. So I was pretty pleased all in all. But a colleague of mine and someone who's helping me train took me aside and he said, look, sometimes it's as important to carry the water well as it is to be on the team and play well, because you need both to be successful. And I'll never forget that. So he said, so hold your head up. If you're asked to carry the water, you carry the water and don't spill it. And if you're asked to be on the field, you better be prepared to step up and make a difference. And I think that really is has really stuck with me.
I'm amazed at some of our conversations that we've had through the years. Because
yeah, don't tell them all.
No, I'm not going to tell all of our stories. We'll save that for another time after you've been there a year.
Maybe 5 or 10.
You mentioned Gene Smith. I've known Gene for a long time. I mean, he is an incredible, incredible person and a great leader as well. And Ohio State is such a strong academic and athletic institution. How's that transition for you been in navigating your relationship with Gene and all the things that come with a high-powered, the largest athletic department in the nation?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. So we were announced, Veronica and myself announced as the next president, or couple coming in on June 3rd of 2020. And we looked at the schedule and we thought, well, we're not, it's COVID. So there was no reception. There's no dinner. There's no nothing. And so I said, well, gosh, this guy, Gene Smith, seems pretty interesting. He's the athletic director. Maybe we ought to just see if he's available for dinner. So that's how it started. We just called over and said, hey, Gene, Sheila, are you available for dinner? And they had sent over a little bit of swag. You know how I love swag. So yeah. They're already.
I'm sporting swag right now, the Blocko, one of my favorite, from my time there. I still get a little swag from there. Not enough or as much as you.
So I just called up Gene and Sheila and I said, hey, thanks, thanks for the shirts. And, are you free for dinner? So we went out to dinner and it was great. It was just like we'd known him forever. And that was really important to try and establish a relationship with folks that you're going to work with before, anyone knows if there's an agenda, right? So it's good. And we've just been great friends since then. He's just tremendous. Sheila is just fabulous.
Right.
Oh, it's been good.
Yeah. So you I've always teased you about being this incredible name dropper, because you don't just drop a name. You actually have something to tell about this particular person. And you've already mentioned President Obama and Michelle. So I want to know what it was like working with him and, any stories you might have about him, Chris, because, you just can do that at where you are and who you are. And you can actually be sitting at home thinking, I would really like to help them and actually make it happen.
Well, just so you know, I dropped your name a lot, Debbie. So I appreciate that. it was incredible to serve. And I'd say to anybody, no matter what administration, if you get the chance to serve the country in that regard, go for it. I will say it was probably the hardest I've ever worked. And I love to work hard, but this was taking it to a new level because we just felt there was so much at stake. Unemployment almost reached 10%. There was a really big agenda around energy. So, it was easy to say yes to, and it got pretty exciting at times. I think, since it's March Madness, I'll share a couple stories here. As any president, as I'm learning, you know, you're never going to please everybody. And so President Obama was getting a little flack because he was playing a lot of golf with the guys, but not with the girls. So one day my chief of staff got a call from the White House and they asked, do you play basketball? And so I said to Asaf, my chief of staff, I said, well, who's calling? And he rolls his eye and he goes, who do you think's calling? And I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no. And I said, okay, give me 5 minutes. So he leaves. I get on the phone with our dear friend, Coach G. I say, Coach Gail Gestenkors. So she's at Texas. And I said, this is important. I know, but I'm having practice. I said, yeah, but I know this is important. So she goes, okay, call you back. So she calls me back. She goes, what's up? And I said, well, I got called by the president to play basketball. And she said, no. And I went, what do you mean no? And she goes, no. And I said, but you don't even know if I can play. And I said, no. So she said, no. And so I said, well, look, as a kid, I used to shoot the ball around with like my brothers. And she goes, no horse, no pig, no nothing. No. Now, golf, you might take him up on golf, but do not do that. He's got game and you don't. I was crushed. But, you know, went back to my chief of staff and I said, yeah, my friends tell me I don't really have any game. So, but how about golf? So then it became my mission to play golf with the president. Never did that, but I got to play golf with some of the cabinet members who became dear friends even to this day. So it was awesome. I think someday I'll play golf with the president, but was not meant to be that particular time. I had my window and it got shut down appropriately. So
you know what? I think the president owes you one. President Obama owes you one. So I think if he's listening, right? You know, maybe someone could get word to him that he owes you a round of golf.
There you go.
You bring up golf. So we've played a lot of golf together, but we've played in several events with the KEL Cancer Fund, which I know was important to you because you already mentioned Hodgkin's lymphoma that you battled and you won. You got any good stories you remember from some of our golf? Because I can tell some, but I think it's better if you tell them because they might you want to tell and not the ones I want to. I just know how much fun it was.
It was a blast. We had some good times. I do remember one time. Well, I remember a few times. I remember one time when there were two foursomes that were teeing off, and of course Hootie and the Blowfish were involved, and Darius Rucker. So that was pretty fun to be on the same tee box. But I remember we had a fourth, and I think this was a warm up round because I don't think he was in the KEL. But to your adoring fans, they should know that you and Beth are a hell of a golfers. I mean, these guys can really hit the ball, and they're, you know, long drivers. I don't know about your putting, but every part of the rest of the game is pretty dang good. So I'm feeling, you know, like, okay, I can hang with these guys, but man, they are long hitters. So we get to about, I don't know, the 15th hole, and you and Beth kind of went after me a little bit in front of this guy. I think his name was Chris too. And said, yeah, you know, if you were going to be in a golf tournament, like which one of us would you want to play with? And you were referring to you and Beth, and I'll never forget it. He said, well, actually, I'd play with Christina. I thought you guys were going to die. And I was going to die too, because I thought, okay, that wasn't what I would have done. I would have picked you, actually, Debbie. He says, yeah, you're just consistent. You're not very long, which is true. But yeah, you know, at least I could figure out when to go for it and when not to. I laughed. You guys didn't razz me for the rest of the 18 holes after that. So that was pretty fun.
We always had fun post game too, whether it was basketball or golf, and just hanging out, laughing and just having some good times. You mentioned March Madness. So, I mean, one of my favorite stories involves you and Hillary Clinton and a March Madness bracket. I have to set the stage a little bit here because every year at this time, you would say to me, hey, can you help me with my bracket? You know, Hillary wants to fill out a bracket. And I'd be like, yeah. Like, Chris is just pulling my leg. She's just dropping Hillary's name on me. Hillary's going to come to the Final Four. Yeah. Hillary Clinton's coming to the Final Four. You know, so this one particular year, you actually asked me again, and I decide that I'm going to fill out the bracket and send it back to you. And I see the most liberal, upset bracket that I could ever put together with all these risky things on there, not thinking that you were ever going to know or Hillary was ever going to know, because it was never really going to happen and get to Hillary. Well, I didn't think it was real until I got a letter from the State Department thanking me. For
Yeah. So that was pretty fun. You know, I was still, I think, smarting a little bit from G shutting me down on getting on the court with the president. So, and you know, the president was is a big sports fan. So I was thinking, what I need to do is go to the best expert I knew, hint, hint, not that, to fill out the brackets for me. So that would be Beth and Debbie. So I got the brackets, sent them to you. You mailed them back. I printed them out. And that night, because it was around St. Patrick's Day, Secretary Clinton was getting an award from the American Irish Fund. Big dinner in D.C. Everybody got all dressed up. And I'll never forget it, because I was going to the dinner. And so I got all dressed up, took my niece, Hannah, who was there, go to the dinner. And I had written out a note to Secretary Clinton. I'd said, "Dear Madam Secretary," what you always would do is you'd start out saying, "Thank you for your service." And then I said, in case, I literally said this, must have been crazy. Maybe I am. In case you have to talk smack to the man, here are the brackets. Thinking I was giving her this great gift. Now, I do think I picked Duke to win, and they did win that year in the men's side. They did win. I think that was 2010, right? So I went to Terry McAuliffe, who I knew and had played golf with, handed it to him. I said, "Do you mind handing this to the secretary?" And so, you know, that was it. I ended up not going to the dinner because, as it turned out, I got a message that I was testifying on the budget for the Department of Energy the next day in Congress. And I was just told that I think one of the TV channels, or there were going to be some TVs there. And I thought, oh, boy, I better go home and just make sure I am sharp, because it's going to be televised, which it ended up being. So I left the dinner. I went home. I stayed up till whatever hour of the night trying to get ready. 2 days later, I come in and my secretary says to me, "You're going to want to read your mail today." And I'm like, yeah. I mean, you know, you wouldn't normally read your mail. Someone else reads it and helps you triage it a bit. But I said, okay. So in there was this letter, and it's actually, I don't know if you can see it, but it's over my right shoulder. It's at the very top, and it's from Secretary Clinton. I can read it to you if I can.
Yeah, sure. Put
my glasses on, I'll read that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hold on. I did get it down.
I mean, look at us getting the president of Ohio State to take her letter off the wall to read it to us. This is awesome.
So I appreciate. Now, it's dated March 22nd, 2010. That is the year Duke won. And the dinner, I think, was like March 18th or something like that. It was right around St. Patrick's Day. "Dear Dr. Johnson, it was a pleasure seeing you at the American Ireland Fund National Gala. Thank you for your kind note and for sharing a copy of your picks for the men's and women's NC2A bracket. Perhaps one day my daughter and I will take you up and Senator Mikulski up on attending a Final Four game. Until then, thank you for your service to the country. I hope to see you again soon. With appreciation and best regards, I am sincerely yours." So, you know, and I think, again, no matter what, you know, what your politics are, if you can serve, it's just, there's just no higher calling. And I think that it just shows, you know, how effective individuals that are called to that service are, because to take the time to send a letter to you, send a letter to me to acknowledge this, just really highly effective people, that gets you going.
I don't want to make light of the fact that that's my service to the country. Filling out a bracket for Madam Secretary.
Well, you know, fortunately, I picked the winner on the men's side, so I'm not sure she No, it was, look, it was a great experience. Some of the serious things that happened less than a month later, which I was reflecting on that, April 20th of 2010, was the Deep Horizon spill in the Gulf. And that was one of the, was a major environmental disaster. It could have been even worse. And I actually met the president in a mentoring, you know, we were both mentoring with members of the cabinet, you know, students, K through 12 STEM students on the South Lawn right after that happened. And, you know, there was a meeting with the president beforehand, and I know you find this shocking, but I get nervous around famous people. It's tough. You know, you may remember the first time we met, you know, I was probably couldn't find any words, but, you know, I went up to the president, shook his hand. That's the time when we could shake hands. Right.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to say. So I just said, you know, Mr. President, we're working really hard to find out what's going on with this oil spill. And then I realized, oh my gosh, why did I even bring it up? Because what had happened was that the blowout preventer valve blew, and there was oil gushing out of the floor of the ocean, of the Gulf, and we couldn't tell anything. We didn't know how much oil was breaking out. We didn't know if we could cap the blowout preventer valve. So we had put together a group of industries CEOs who actually knew about blowout preventer valves and tried to get, you know, knowledge and information. And I give a lot of credit to Secretary Chu, who made a really gutsy call to cap it. But before then, we couldn't tell the American people anything. So I was so, you know, I just remember saying that, thinking, what an idiot, you know, why did I even bring that up? So I woke up that night, about 3 a.m, literally. And I thought, you know, I think I know how to measure the oil spill, how much is coming out of the oil, the pipe. Because what happened is the grout in the pipe got into the oil. And so it's like little particles. And when I was the scientist at the University of Colorado, an engineer, we did an experiment called particle image velocimetry in a water flow, and we seeded it with little bubbles. And I figured, well, the grit probably would act the same as those little bubbles. And if you do a double exposure hologram, then you can tell not only, you know, the direct, how you can tell how much is coming out, because you can tell the velocity of the spill, because you took a double, you had to take two pictures, not just one, but you had to tell where the particle was and where it went. Then you could back calculate the flow. So I sent an email to Marcia McNutt, who was head of the USGS at the time and was leading up some of the recovery effort. And I said, Marcia, I think you can use particle image velocimetry to do this. Here's a paper I wrote actually in 1990 with a really talented postdoc who led the program. I said, what do you think? And she emailed right back. She goes, you know, we've got one of the best particle image velocimetry systems. We can get it down there. Within that week, the president was able to walk out on the Rose Garden, tell the American people that more than 20,000 barrels of oil were coming out. So at least we understood a little bit of the disaster that we were dealing with. And information is helpful. That's what we've seen in the pandemic. You know, the more knowledge we have, the better decisions we make. We follow the data and follow the science. So on a serious note, I mean, obviously we're doing a lot of triaging of a number of different things, which is what an administration does.
See, this is where you lost me at particle imagery, velocimetry. This is the way our relationship has been. You throw out something that is so absolutely jaw-dropping that you had a role in that entire situation to help save our country from that disaster. It's amazing. Like, amazing, Dr. J, you know? Like, it's just really cool. So you go in that direction with how smart you are, and you know how I love it, because once again, I said it earlier, you know, I don't always know what you're talking about, but I do remember a conversation you went in depth with me on blue in the TV and what that means and how it's important for us, all of us that watch TV or even our computers. Like, give us a little breakdown. Since you went into the science, tell me about the blue inside our TV. Everyone in basketball wants to know this.
I'm sure nobody really wants to know this, but my work in science, you know, we talked about particle image velocimetry and photographing it or holography. So it's all about imaging. It's all about light, right? So one of the most difficult colors to faithfully reproduce. Now, you know, we're going back a decade or more. So the organic, yeah.
Before you say it, you know, some people won't even say this word in Columbus.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going to give you a free pass on this.
All right. That's true. Yeah, that school up north, right? So let's just, yeah. Well, I didn't say yellow, so I guess it's blue. But anyway, long story short, we had some of the work we did was trying to reproduce in the 1990s and 2000s really, really blue blues. And so one of the blues that people probably recognize is the blue in Avatar. So that came from some of our optical systems that we developed that were used in that movie, including, you know, the glasses, the projection optics. And every time I see the picture, you know, the Avatar with that blue, you know, I just smile because, again, I was very, very fortunate to have some incredible students at the university that really embrace these ideas and help figure out how to create digital 3D TV and other sort of inventions that we've had.
I just am amazed at how smart you are, but also how grounded you are, because sport had a lot to do with it and the way you grew up, and now you're in charge of the Ohio State, and it's just fantastic to watch your success and your climb. So I want to ask you this, and you can handle this any way you want, Chris, is or Dr. Johnson or Dr. J. I'm sure that I'm supposed to be calling you Dr. Johnson. But sort of like the day in the life of the president of Ohio State, like people don't realize how normal someone like you would be, but yet you have such a high pedigree of education and experience and all the things that we've talked about today. Where does that fit? Like, if I'm a student listening to this, I mean, how do I get in there and have coffee with you? Like, I can't wait to come and see you in your role as the Ohio State president. But like, what's your day like? Like, how's it go?
Well, first of all, it's easy to stay humble when I have friends like you, because you'll keep me that way, and you always have. So that's been really fun. So usually it starts pretty early. I get up between 5 and 5:30, and I like to work a couple hours before I come into the office. Try to get into the office by 8:30, but I have calls that start at 8. And so we were starting most mornings at 8 on COVID calls, talking about, you know, how we're going to stand up testing at scale, contact tracing, you know, issues around keeping our faculty, students, and staff safe. And then, you know, in your first year, you want to meet as many people as possible, get out to the community, get out to the university, you know, meet students, faculty, and staff. And it's been hard. It's been really hard because, you know, we didn't let people more than, you know, gatherings more than 10. And in fact, we discouraged gatherings altogether. So I need to follow, you know, I need to practice what I preach. So that's been hard. So a lot of that's been done through Zoom. And it's just difficult to get a census of someone that way. Then I have a cabinet, great cabinet, about 14 members of the cabinet. So we have a cabinet meeting on Tuesdays. I have, you know, faculty senate one-on-one meetings. I have a great board, actually a fantastic board, a great board chair with Gary Heminger, who was very helpful. It was very helpful during the return to athletics. So, you know, there's just so many constituents, and you want to be out in the community. It's a pretty full day. You know, I wrap up maybe in the office by 6. I get homework every night, just like I did when I was a Undersecretary of Energy. I get a big book every night. Actually, this was a thin book for last night. Do homework for a couple hours. And then the hardest thing is getting into a regular rhythm of working out. So I tend to be able to work out on the weekends. But I try to get in a lift and, you know, Peloton during the week. It's just kind of hard right now. I haven't really established that rhythm. So I hope to do that. But it's a big place, right? I mean, there's 60,000 plus students, 65,000 students. And as I said before, 3,000 or 4,000 faculty and 600,000 alums. And then there's the state of Ohio. We've had tremendous leadership by Governor DeWine and Lieutenant Governor Husted. So wanted to build a relationship there. I'm starting to meet the legislatures and the federal delegation. So It's been a year of just really getting to know the place and getting to know what it means to be a Buckeye. And, you know, part of it is if you look over my left shoulder, you see my grandfather's diploma from The Ohio State University from 1896. So there are only 770 students at that time. And we almost have 100 times that today. So I think it helps at times that I can reflect that, you know, I have some roots that go back to the beginning of this institution, and it feels really like home. I do have office hours, and I do pop in with the presidents. I did realize, sorry to interrupt, but I did realize that I did have office hours at like Hopkins and at Duke. They just have about 10 times fewer students. So I'm a little behind on scheduling and meeting, but I love to meet with the students. So that's something I'm working on.
I bet they can't wait to get with you too, once we feel like we're safe and protocols are. So the last thing I want to know from you, Chris, is why is sport important to the university culture? Where does sport fit in academia?
You know, to me, it allows the opportunity for our student athletes, which there's over 1,000 here at The Ohio State University, to gain those leadership skills, how to work well on a team and be an inspiration to other students on the campus. And so to me, it transcends the sport. It's important because whether it is NC2A Division I athletics or our other performing arts or dance or the other ways that our students come together to learn how to find their place in the world is very important. We have a thing called the Gene Smith Leadership Institute, and that involves for all our athletes the opportunity of how to build a portfolio and, you know, find your path. I want that for every student here. So one of my dreams at The Ohio State University is to take inspiration from what athletics is doing and provide those sort of opportunities for all our students and vice versa. So I think it is in the era of the pandemic too. You know, I don't think you can underestimate the ability to bring people together around a common entity to cheer for. And I think it was a tremendous uplift for everyone's spirit to right now I watched the guys yesterday beat Minnesota in the Big Ten basketball championship. They're playing today at 2:00. So giving people a reason in this difficult time to rally, I don't think you can underestimate that.
You are a wonderful friend and an incredible leader. And I thank you for all of your inspiration, all the fun that we've had, the more fun that we have to come. I will be taking you up on, I plan on being at the president's house and visiting the box and tailgating in a parking lot with you for an Ohio State football game coming up soon.
That would be great. We'd love to have you. And just thanks again for taking the time. I'm a big fan. And again, I really, really value the times that we've spent together, especially up in the crow's nest. And I'll never forget watching you and Beth do your thing. So good luck. Enjoy calling the games. I'll be listening. And thanks again. Great to see you.